Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Wake up to something different on Sunday mornings by joining me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz. The finest in modern jazz, from hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz every Sunday morning at 9 on Sheffield Live. 93.2 FM.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk, and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X-T.
Good morning. Welcome to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM on digital if in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms. And we play some rather cool music as well, or so we like to think. We've got Julian Pauly live in the studio. Later in this hour, we'll be talking to our PG. Unfortunately, Ogo Osamoh, Dr. Ogo Osamoh, can't be with us today. He's feeling a bit under the weather, so we wish him all the best for a speedy recovery. He's generally our guest speaker every second Saturday of the month. All being well, next week, and indeed every third Saturday of the month, our guest speaker will be Gareth Morgan, who's a member of and also ex-president of the Sheffield Photographic Society. Talking of which, their open photography competition for 2026 is ongoing. The deadline for entries is next Saturday, the 21st of February. You can email spsphotography514 at gmail.com for more information. You can also check them out on social media. They've got a very active Facebook page and also an Instagram page. You can also check their website out as well, sheffieldphotosociety.org.uk, all good stuff. A reminder also, Mexburn Swinton Astronomical Society, Planets in the Park is next Saturday. It's not next Saturday the 28th, it's a couple of weeks away, on the 28th of February 2026, so it's the last day of February. It runs from 6 o'clock until 8:30 in the evening. So it's an evening of stargazing and planet watching at Clifton Park Garden House and Courtyard in Rotherham. And that's S652AA. It's a free event. No booking is required, and it's suitable for all ages. Presentations and displays will complement observing of the night sky. And also, if you have a telescope and require advice, please bring it along. But wrap up warm for the evening, all being well. The weather will be with them on that event. A lot of these astronomical events, depend upon the weather. But there will be other things to do if the sky is not very clear or the weather is against us. Refreshments will be available for small charge as well. So that's Saturday the 28th of Feb, 6 p.m. till 8:30 p.m. and that's Planets in the Park. And anybody who tunes in regularly to the show will know that our guest speaker every first Saturday of the month, and if there are any fifth Saturday this month, is Phil Muffett from the Mexburn Swinton Astronomical Society. Does some great work. Another reminder, smartphonefreechildhood.org. You can sign the Parent Pact online there and join parents in your area or delaying smartphones and social media. All very interesting stuff. In fact, I saw in the paper only yesterday about a lot of people for New Year have not given up alcohol. They've decided to limit their phone use. Which I thought was an interesting one.
That's a cheat, isn't it?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't know about that. And talking just, this is one to keep in mind for the future. Put the date in your diary. Sheffield Photographic Society also have their up-and-coming annual exhibition for 2026. It will take place in Sheffield Cathedral from Friday the 20th of March until Monday the 30th of March. 2026. I'm sure Gareth Morgan will tell us more about that next Saturday. Meanwhile,
just going back to that, it's a great venue at the cathedral, all that history, and they've got a great cafe as well, haven't they?
Yeah, they have indeed.
It's quite warm in there as well. So, well, right, go on then.
So, in the science news this week, then, Paul, over to you.
Well, we've just been watching the first week of the Winter Olympics, and we've been watching the snowboarding.
Wow,
which is absolutely been amazing. The men's half pipe snowboarding. Well, what can we say? Nuts, weren't it, Julie?
Well, crazy.
Absolutely,
yeah, crazy. Yeah.
So anyway, as part of a 2024 study analysing the climate reliability of 93 locations to host the Winter Olympics, researchers found that by 2050, only 52 would be suitable in a middle emissions scenario. This scenario assumes that all of the world's pledged commitments to reduce carbon pollution are met, something which the majority of climate scientists say is very unlikely. In a high-emission scenario, just 45 locations remain by 2050 and 30 by 2080. I assume we'll have to go higher and higher.
Well, I think that report's saying it's going to disappear. We might, in future years, we might not have any Winter Olympics at all because they can't guarantee they're not going to invest all that money and time.
But it did snow last week in Italy, didn't it? While we were watching,
it did.
It was chucking it down.
Yeah, interesting.
So next, Africa recorded its fastest year of solar growth in 2025, with installations rising by 54% year on year. A report from Global Solar Council found that the technology was expanding at both grid-connected utility scale and at privately financed more local scale, with nearly half of new capacity attributed to small-scale systems. Meanwhile, a study by Harvard University has revealed that drinking 3 cups of tea or coffee a day appears to lower the risk of dementia, as caffeine can help protect the brain. Researchers looked at data from 131,000 people in the USA who record their intake of caffeinated hot drinks and that had their memory and health tracked for 4 decades. Having at least 2 to 3 cups of coffee per day was linked to an 18% lower risk of dementia, while 1 to 2 cups of tea each day cut the risk by 16% compared with those who had very few hot drinks. And finally, closer to home, moss, which has been extinct in Yorkshire for centuries, is being reintroduced to improve carbon storage and bolster flood defences. The Yorkshire Peat Partnership is planting a species known as sphagnum, that's S-P-H-A-G-N-U-M, or stine, A-O-S-T-I-N-double-I, at 2 locations. one on the Yorkshire Dales and another on Marsden Moor, where it will improve water retention or of blanket bogs and create diverse habitats for wildlife.
Yeah, all good stuff. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the Live Science Radio Show, of course, here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. We're every Saturday morning at 11 until 12, talking about science in all its different forms. Talking about that sphagnum ostine, we heard on the radio the other day, if something's named with an I at the end, it's a male, and if it's got an A at the end, it's a female, I think. Yes. Is that correct? I hope
yes.
So. He says yes. We'll have to check that afterwards just to make sure I've not misremembered that fact. Anyway, next up, airport noise. I read this in the paper probably last year and I thought it was such an interesting story. It's a little article by a guy called Paul Simons and he does it under the title of Weather Eye. But he's talking about noise here and I think it's a really interesting one because people think... air pollution's, you know, not a lot of people know about that, but noise pollution, you know, can have big impacts on people. And there's not as much legislation around as there is for air quality. So thousands of people regularly suffer from noise pollution caused by aircraft, and the problem is predicted to worsen with climate change. Scientists at the University of Reading have found that as the air grows warmer, aircraft will have to take off from airports at lower angles because warmer air is less dense than cold air. And so on hot days, aircraft get less lift as they take off. That means the noise of the aircraft louder from the ground for longer periods. And the angle that aircraft climb will decrease by up to 3% on average. And on very hot days, it could decrease by 7.5%. So the study, and this was from University of Reading, looked at noise levels around 30 airports in Europe, focusing on the Airbus A320, which is often used for short-haul flights. In central London, about 60,000 people have to put up with the blight of aircraft noise of 50 decibels or more, a level that causes stress and disturbs sleep. The investigation found that by 2050, another 2,500 or so people could be impacted by these levels of noise, and particularly low-frequency noise, which is deeper and is not only annoying, but also travels further. Already 45 decibels of aircraft noise can reach as far as 22 miles from an airport. And the article says aircraft noise is very disturbing for sleep, with insomnia a frequent problem, and 55 decibels of noise at night can result in increased risk of heart attacks. Even levels above 45 decibels can result in increased risk of hypertension or high blood pressure, which can lead to serious long-term health problems such as strokes. So aircraft noise can also impact memory and learning in children. I thought that was a fascinating article about the impact of airport noise.
Birdman who left her behind. had to fly almost straight and to hate. There's only one, and though the race is run, pilots have her love, feels him far above. As
promised, some interesting music there. Aeroplane Head Woman by Pete Brown and Piblockto from 1977. We played that because we're talking about airport noise, an interesting one.
Yes.
Related to climate change as well. Of course, listen to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science. You know, it's different forms every Saturday morning, 11 until 12. This next story is about something called not plastic. And this was an article in the Sunday Times on the 4th of January this year, so a few weeks ago now. It's written by Ben Spencer, who was their science editor. And it starts saying the consumer economy is built on convenience. A coffee on the go, a sandwich on the move, a meal at your desk, all consumed in minutes. But the material they are packed in, even cardboard takeaway boxes and coffee cups lined with plastic to make them waterproof, will pollute the environment for years to come. A sandwich has a shelf life of a few days, if you're lucky, but we package it in plastic that is going to last for centuries. And that's according to Rodrigo Garcia Gonzalez, who said it doesn't make any sense. So Rodrigo and his fellow innovator, Pierre-Yves Paslier, Gonzalez is 41, his colleague Pierre-Yves Paslier is 38, have a solution: seaweed. When the two friends were studying for a master's degree in innovation design engineering at Imperial College London a little over 10 years ago, they set up a company called NotPla, which uses seaweed to make disappearing packaging that lasts just as long as it needs to. So NotPla's material is derived from a natural polymer found within seaweed, a compound known as hydrocolloid. When you touch seaweed, that is the gooey part that makes your hands slimy. It is literally the glue that holds seaweed together. And seaweed is perfect because it can grow up to a metre a day, can you believe? And it's on every coastline in the world. So when dried and processed, seaweed has similar properties to plastic and can be used to make flexible, transparent films or rigid, sturdy structures. So by blending extracts of seaweed species from around the world, including from France, Southeast Asia and South Africa, NotPla can create materials precisely tailored for specific applications, whether it's a greaseproof lining for a box of chips or a fork to eat them with. An important thing is that unlike plastic, their products biodegrade as soon as they are no longer needed. You just add oxygen, water and bacteria and it starts to break down. You get that by putting it in the bin, in a compost heap or in with paper recycling. So as I said earlier, NotPla, that's NotPla, is short for not plastic. It can also make edible products out of a transparent, flavourless film with a texture like a seaweed wrapping of a sushi roll. So the company has worked with the sports chain Decathlon to make pearls of energy gel, which can be popped straight in the mouth without fiddling with plastic wrapping. The product has already been tested at the London Marathon. And NotPla is also developing packets of pasta, rice or sauce that can go straight in a pan, bag and all, and sachets of coffee that can be stirred into hot water. So it's quite revolutionary. So it's one to look out for, this NotPla. So the startup was given a boost in December 2022 when the innovators were awarded the Earthshot Prize, and that's the environmental award set up by the Prince of Wales. It not only gave them £1 million to develop their business, but also put William in their corner. The Prince has since visited their research labs in Hackney, Wick, which is in East London, several times. They say, so it's Garcia Gonzalez and Pierre Yves Paslier, who are the inventors, say that he's our best business developer. And that's either talking about Prince William there. He really knows his seaweed. And he's passionate about the subject and making a difference. Wow. In 2022, they say, we had made a few hundred thousand packaging units. We were doing trials with Just Eat, but we were not on the market, not at scale. But the Earthshot Prize gave us a stamp of approval that a lot of industrial partners were wanting to see. Since then, we have put 30 million seaweed packaging units on the market. And this includes providing food packaging for 50 sports stadiums, music venues and theme parks in the UK, including Wimbledon, Wembley and the O2 Arena. They've also started providing food packaging at Imperial College's campus food outlets. So Hugh Braid, who's Imperial College London's president, said, "It's a proud moment to see NotPLA come full circle from students with big ideas to entrepreneurs scaling their business in our ecosystem to being suppliers in our own sustainability efforts on campus." So NotPLA, which employs 50 people, including several Imperial College London graduates, is not resting on its laurels. They say, if we could get into the high street rather than just being in selected venues, that would make a huge difference. For example, they said, if we can get into Pret a Manger, Starbucks and Kentucky Fried Chicken and people like that, getting them to pay a bit more attention to this problem, there's a huge opportunity to become mainstream. But even that would not be enough for these ambitious entrepreneurs. The vision is to become an ingredient brand. We want to be the Tetra Pak of sustainable packaging, they said. Isn't that a fantastic story? So that's NotPLA, company set up by two guys, Rodrigo Garcia Gonzalez and Pierre-Yves Paslier. Fantastic.
Sur mon lit à bouffer sa langue en buvant trop mon whisky. Quant à moi, peu dormi, vie débris, mais j'ai dû dormir dans la gouttière où j'ai eu un flash. En quatre couleurs. Allez hop, un matin, une louloute est venue chez moi, poupée de cellophane, cheveux chinois. Un sparadrap, une gueule de bois. A bu ma bière dans un grand verre en caoutchouc. Comme un indien dans son igloo. Ça plane pour moi. Ça plane pour moi. Ça plane pour moi. Moi, 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 moi. Ça plane pour moi. Ça plane pour moi. Allez hop, la nana, quel panard, quelle vibration de s'envoyer sur paillasson. Limé, ruiné, vidé, comblé. You are the king of the divan. Qu'elle me dit en passant. The king of the divan. Ça plane pour moi. Ça plane pour moi. Ça plane pour moi. Moi, 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 moi. Ça plane pour moi. Ça plane pour moi. Allez hop, t'occupe, t'inquiète, touche pas ma planète. It's not today que le ciel me tombera sur la tête. Et que la colle me manquera. C'est marre à tout casser, l'évier, le bar me laissant seul. Comme un grand connard. Le pied dans le plat.
What a great track, eh? Any excuse to play that. C'est plan pour moi by Plastic Bertrand. We played that, of course, because we're talking about two guys who set up a great company, Not Pla. Means stands for not plastic. Great stuff. If you could hear some talking before we play that bit, it's because we've got another studio here at Sheffield Live, and it's a pre-recorded studio, and something technically went wrong, so we've had to go and try and help. It's all good stuff. This is a beauty of live radio. It does make it rather interesting. It is. You are listening to the Live Science Radio Show, of course, and it is live here on Sheffield Live 93.2
FM.
Too live sometimes. Before we speak to RPG, who's waiting in the wings, I'm just going to talk about something that just might be right up his street. It was an article I picked up maybe a few weeks ago talking about an AI or artificial intelligence headset which can predict epileptic seizures. And I thought this was an interesting story. So an AI-powered headset that can predict epileptic seizures minutes before they occur has been developed by scientists in Scotland. The Glasgow Caledonian University team behind the research says the device could transform the way the condition is managed. Hundreds of thousands of people in the UK live with epilepsy, as well as millions around the world, but there is no readily available device that can give people warning of seizures. So this AI headset analyses brain waves and heart functions to detect an impending seizure, allowing the wearer to take precautions or warn those around them. So Professor Hadi Larinjani, the scientist behind the project, said its greatest benefit could be giving people with epilepsy more confidence and helping them to avoid any secondary injuries caused by a seizure. I think, I don't know if it's a female or a male professor, but they said a few minutes warning could be life-changing. Our goal is to empower patients and families with time to act to stay safe and live more independently. It is a he, the professor said. They wanted the headset to be light and discreet when worn. The system was trained using thousands of hours of historical electroencephalography and electrocardiography recordings. The research used a custom-made phantom head attaching electrodes to stimulate a real user. By learning to identify the electrical and physiological patterns that precede a seizure, the artificial intelligence can issue an alert, giving patients and families time to prepare. It has an accuracy of up to 95%.
Wow.
It will be likely some years before the product becomes widely available due to regulatory approvals for medical devices. So the team has secured support from UK Research and Innovation through its £9 million proof of concept programme. So that's a great bit of news there. So an AI headset which can predict epileptic seizures has been developed by Glasgow Caledonian University.
I'm holding it here in my mind. So
Something Going On In My Head. Great track by Status Quo, can you believe? 1971. Because we're talking about Glasgow Caledonian University developing an AI headset that can predict epileptic seizures. All good stuff. You are listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. Time for me to stop talking for a while. Hurrah. And we should have our PG on the line. Good morning, PG. Oh, where is he?
Hello, Paul.
Oh, I bet we're going to have another technical issue now. Hang on a minute. Are you there, Paul?
Hello.
Yes!
Somebody
pressed. Oh, these things are sent to try us.
There was a button pressed on the desk.
I don't know. A bit of sunshine and everything goes mad.
I know. Hey, you've got to have an eagle eye in this place, Paul, I tell you.
Oh, that was a hard one.
You know, we photographed the desk and everything. Oh, you know all the pitfalls, don't you, of being in here. But that's the beauty. And we always say this is a beauty of live radio because it does make it rather dynamic.
Oh, dangerous. Absolutely, yeah.
Brilliant. So, Paul, what's caught your eye in the science news this week, then?
Well, a bit of a follow-on from your last thing, I think, caught my eye, and that's artificial intelligence in use again. So I know the thing for sort of epileptic fits, and there's in the past been the use of dogs that can sense the impending sort of condition. And I've known a few people who suffer from epileptic fits, and some of those people themselves get a feeling that they've got a fit coming on. But I think applying artificial intelligence and creating sort of rules so that you've got some idea of an impending attack means that people can go and lay down comfortably rather than collapsing in awkward places. And, sort of seek out help and make sure that you're prepared for the event if you do that. So I was interested to read in the sort of local news from Sheffield University. They've become a key research centre now for MND sufferers, motor neurone disease. And they report this last week that artificial intelligence has been applied to something that's a critical procedure for MND sufferers, and that's MND is a wasting disease, so you tend to lose body mass, weight, muscle over time. And unfortunately for most sufferers, you get to a period where you have to be fitted with a feeding tube. It's an uncomfortable thing. It's not a natural thing. It's difficult to sort of come to terms with. And a lot of the sufferers say that the big problem, I think, for the disease is that they can't really predict what's going to happen, when it's going to happen. So what they've done is they've applied artificial intelligence to all the data that's collected from MND sufferers. So when they're first diagnosed, they put that data in, AI has looked at that data and has come up with a program that can predict when a feeding tube needs to be fitted. And it's accurate, they say, across the whole sort of population to within about 3 months of necessity for fitting a feeding tube, which is a lot better prediction than the previous sort of attempts. But the good news is that for a significant part of the MND sufferers population, it's actually accurate down to 1 month. So, and once you're fitted with a feeding device, it means that instead of having to struggle with made meals, things where you've got to handle things, you're fed directly through a tube to your stomach. As I say, it's not the best thing in the world. It's not comfortable, but it does give an extension of care and time for people who are suffering from MND. So,
wow.
I think the university has said that it's one of the hardest aspects of living with MND. That was Professor Jonathan Cooper-Knock from University of Sheffield. And that study has been published in eBioMedicine. So that's now going to move on to a lot of research platforms for researchers to develop even further beyond that. So again, a quick application of artificial intelligence.
Like we always talk about this good. There's good and bad in all technology and science, isn't there? You know, there's good uses of things and technology.
Yes.
But I read only the other day, one AI scientist said that soon, you know, it's possible that new medicines and development, new medicines and things, instead of taking 10 years because of AI, could be looking at weeks and months. You almost could look at eradicating stuff.
Kind of goes to the heart of the sort of main thrust of what I was looking at. So a few bits of news, but basically, if you're looking at artificial intelligence, then it's relying upon computer work. And I think that underlying computers, there's the means that they operate. So starting out is kind of an understanding that not everybody is going to be skilled in using artificial intelligence, in designing systems for use with artificial intelligence. So they've got to start looking towards people who know how to make the functions that operate it. And that brings you to computer coding. So we quite often hear about BASIC with computers, and that's essentially the process of converting data into a series of noughts and ones. Because that's either on or off, or yes or no sort of point within the sort of control system for a computer, that's a lot simpler than rapidly changing things like analog systems, which aren't there. So you'll be familiar with it if you've played a CD, because the CD, the music, rather than being analog on there, is converted into a series of ones and noughts, the basic sort of coding. And that's then used by the systems to make that into music again when it comes out of your speakers. But from the point of going in, it's converted into zeros and ones, and that's printed onto the CD. And the CD then reads that off, and it changes it back to an analog out of the speakers, so a sound wave that you get. And it's not one language. In programming languages, a tester, I guess, for that is that they've got a range of languages like C or Python, HTML, Ruby on Rails, C++, Scala, Perl, P-E-R-L, PHP, SQL, JavaScript, Swift, and Objective-C. So basically, if you get into coding, then you can start to make systems and programs that work to do a lot of the things we need. So again, if you look in most people's pocket these days, you'll find your mobile phone, and it couldn't function without some coding underneath to actually drive a lot of the processors It converts your voice into the ones and notes. It uses that then through the system to transmit that over whatever the connection is through the airwaves to another telephone, which then decodes the ones and notes and gives you a sound that you recognise out of the earpiece. So I thought, well, that's really quite daunting. So what's been happening of late is that that sort of programming has been passed over to an artificial intelligence-supported kind of programming. So to simplify things for you, you can go like the chatbot sort of route. You can go through a simplified version of encoding a program, and the actual work under the bonnet, so to speak, is done by the artificial intelligence. So you can ask it to create something that switches your lights on, and then you have to say, and also you need to create something that switches the lights off again. And then you've got to create a program that converts how you're going to command that and makes it into an action. So you'll see that things have been developed dealing with computers. Nowadays, you'll either have a touchpad or you'll have the old mouse. And the mouse was a great leap forward in terms of operating computers. To allow you to move around the screen, click on things that are displayed on the screen, and click to make things happen. And again, with the artificial intelligence, then it's sort of merged into a kind of a chatbot type device. The example that sort of brought it to mind is based on somebody's experience with a system called Orchids, which is the, now they call it Viber coding tool, which means that you don't have to have the technical skills that you need to build apps or games, but typing in a text prompt into a chatbot. So it's they've really sort of started to become very popular in recent months, because otherwise coding schools are around. I think that you'll find that if you want to go to a website of somebody like computerscience.org, you can find about computer coding and also about the training opportunities that are there for people to develop skills in one of these languages, many of these languages, or in the use of possibly AI-supported or vibe coding tools. So they're really sort of helping to see that they can make some of the professional services are able to be used more quickly and cheaply by artificial intelligence. So they say the ease with which something like this Orchids approach can be hacked, and that's been demonstrated by risks of allowing the AI bots deep access to our computers in exchange for the convenience of allowing them to carry out these tasks autonomously. So a reporter from the BBC said that Orchids got millions of users, they say, and it's used by top companies like Google, Uber and Amazon. It's rated as one of the best programs for some elements of vibe coding, according to a rating system from AppBench and other analytical devices and companies. So its security flaws were demonstrated to the BBC by one of their cyber security researchers, Etizaz Mohsin. And after downloading the Orchids desktop to a spare laptop, started to use the vibe coding and test it out. So he asked Orchids to build him a code for a computer game based on the BBC News website. And automatically the AI assistant began compiling code on the screen, that he couldn't understand because it was sort of beyond his sort of learnt area. So, but exploiting a cyber security weakness, which they don't disclose what it is, he was able to gain access to a project and view and edit some of the code. It could then add a small line of code somewhere in thousands and thousands of lines of code, which letters, numbers and symbols, without knowing that it had been done. So it appears to have allowed access to the computer, because shortly afterwards a notepad file called Joey's Hacked appeared on his desktop, and his wallpaper changed to an image of an artificial intelligence hacker.
Oh.
So the implications of that on the platforms and tens of thousands of projects are obvious. The nefarious hacker, they say, could have easily installed a virus on my machine without having to do anything, and then personal or company private and financial data could have been stolen. An attacker could have accessed internet history, even switched on the cameras and microphones on the device to spy on the person. So it says that most hacks involve the victim downloading a piece of malicious software or being tricked into handing over login details. So sometimes you get all sorts of tricks, but one of them is to replicate a known website and get people to sign into that website feeling that they're on a site that they know, but in actual fact there's some slight variation in it, so it looks like your day-to-day thing, like logging into your bank, but it's not.
Yeah,
it's actually
yeah.
a feed to a hacker. So this attack, though, was carried out without any involvement, so it's called a zero-click attack. So that means you don't have to be a fool and press the wrong button and do the wrong thing. It could be coded, and that sort of introduces a fundamental shift into how developers can interact with these tools. And if it's created an entirely new class of vulnerability, then the whole proposition of having AI handle things becomes a lot more risky than it appears.
Yeah, interesting. Well, when you started that chat off, Paul, you talked about all the different programming languages. I actually knew a lot of them.
Yeah.
Python, SQL, JavaScript, and I also knew about C because I used to work with a lad who used to program in C# back
yep.
then. Yeah, it's interesting, yep. but it is interesting for a modern generation to realise what's behind all everything yep. that we've got.
Well, and the reality of things, as I said a bit later on in the piece, is that the ORCID's team were difficult to get to reply to messages, and they said they were overwhelmed by inbound messages. But the company is based in San Francisco, and it was founded in 2025, and it's got less than 10 employees. So BBC researcher said he's found flaws in ORCIDs and not yet in other vibe coding platforms. So there are other ones called Claude Code, Cursor, Windsurf and Lovable, amongst others. But the main security implications of vibe coding is that without understanding the framework, having the discipline, the documentation to review, then the code can be attacked out of sight, if you like. And that's a quote from Kevin Curran, who's a professor of cybersecurity at Ulster University. Artificial intelligence tools that carry out complex tasks for us, known as agentic AI, are increasingly coming into public arena by hitting the headlines. And one example is a viral Clawbot agent, also known as Maltbot or Open Claw.
And gosh.
These are the kind of bits of programming that you found done in other ways, but now this is an open back door if you're using some of the free artificial intelligence agents to program. And the artificial intelligence can look deeply into the systems, and that means that they can look at potential security risks and flaws. So nowadays we can do a lot by this automation process, but it doesn't create the infrastructure or the company behind it to be able to make sure that they've got good coding hygiene, and that there can't be introduced a tracking device or an access device via a piece of code onto your system without you having to open a door officially to allow something in. So it's quite an interesting sort of move forward for artificial intelligence. And it's one where I think we all have to realise that convenience comes at some cost.
And we don't always know what's behind what we're using, do we?
No, and you know, we don't always know what that cost could be. I say it could be access to your personal data. It could be access to your sort of banking details, and the things that really strike home to an individual. But we've also talked about things in the past where large data farming organisations can look for ways to influence your thoughts. That could be that it's a clever way of marketing things, so giving you that sort of earworm of something that they know is going to chime with a high percentage of people, or targeting particular people in a particular way. They can do that by looking at your browsing history.
All the cookies access, and things.
Yeah, so they can access, you know, what's of interest to you. They can then style something as a piece of information that appeals to you, so you respond to it more readily because it's already in areas that you've been interested in. It doesn't necessarily have to be anything to do with that. And if you want to have a scroll through the online clickbait sort of places, you can see where they'll take. One of the things I noticed this week was a clickbait piece which said the new series of Father Brown's been taken off air. You sort of, oh gosh, why? If you're a fan of Father Brown, what you find out is it's just been rescheduled because of the Winter Olympics. So, you know, quite often it's that sort of thing. And if you see those areas consistently, you'll get stories about the royal family, about Meghan and Harry, about who's doing what. And then of late, very much, I think, because a lot of younger people on devices don't watch actual TV that much, they say, oh, terrible news this morning. The newsreader had to let you have this devastating news. You go, oh, crikey, what's that? And, oh, well, you remember this person who used to be on here and they used to have this dog with them. Well, the dog died. Oh, it's terrible. And you think, what? But it's the way that they can get inside, and unfortunately it's not always the base level things. So we're coming up to midterm elections for the United States. There were lots and lots of allegations about previous elections being stolen, being cheated, and the same thing around the world where influence has been applied when things that are supposed to be democratic processes can be influenced by people reading these kind of spoofed articles. And it sort of chimes with people. It can create things, and they can look at things like patriotism and say, well, okay, you know, do you revere your flag as an American? They have to get up and salute the flag every day. And UK, you know, are you proud of the Union Jack, or which device that means something to you? So artificial intelligence, great potential for the future, but also we've got to be very wary. And I think people have got to be more savvy. So I think the government is trying to open up training for people in coding. Certainly, I've seen a lot of work for trying to get girls into sort of technical side of computing, and try and sort of arm ourselves with the right people and the right legislation to keep us safe.
Indeed. And on that note, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
We've got the film show coming in soon, but we're going to finish off with "It's the End of the World as We Know It" by REM, and I'm fine about it or something. And I feel fine.
But I'm feeling fine. Yeah.
Excellent stuff, Paul. Thank you, Paul. Bye bye. We'll speak Monday on Glory's Rock Show. Bye bye.
Cheers. Bye.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes, an aeroplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Turn world serves its own needs. Dummy, serve your own needs. Speak, grunt, no strength. The ladder starts to clatter with fear. Bite down, high wire and a fire. Represented seven games in a government for hire and a combat site. Left to west are coming in a hurry with the furies breathing down your neck. Team my team reporters babble Trump, Kevin Kraft. Look at that, no plane. Fine, then, overflow. Population common food, but it'll do. Save yourself, serve yourself. World serves its own needs. Listen to your heartbeat. Dummy with the rapture and the reverend and the right. Slice and burn, return, listen to yourself churn. Locking in, uniform and book burning, blood letting. Every motive escalate, automotive centerate. Light a candle, light a motor, step down, watch your heel crush, crush. Uh-oh, this means no fear, cavalier, renegade, steer clear. A tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world. Lester Banks, birthday party, cheesecake, jelly bean, boom.